On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
We do know who's going to be contesting the All-Ireland Football Final in a couple of weeks' time, and it does raise the whole theme of superstition, which is a key part of sport, but so is bad luck. And of course, if you're talking about Gaelic football and the fact that Mayo will be once again contesting an All-Ireland Final in a couple of weeks, one of the most enduring pieces of Irish sporting lore concerns that last Mayo team who lifted Sam Maguire back in 1951, and the belief that there was some kind of curse put upon the team after that victory. But where did the story come from? And has it really been rightly debunked? And more broadly, where did these so-called curses come from? What do they tell us about Irish society more broadly? And what sustains them for so long? Well, Donal Fallon has been consulting all of his witchcraft sources, no doubt, to try and get to the bottom of this one. And he joins us now in studio. Donal, good to see you as ever. The story of the Mayo curse inevitably does the rounds, but some people now are beginning to look at it in newer ways.
Yeah, at the outset, I want to tip my hat in the direction of Dr. Siobhan Doyle of TU Dublin. She's written some really good pieces on the GAA for RTE's Brainstorm website. And if people haven't seen that site, it's well worth looking at. It's kind of where the national broadcaster, in conjunction with our universities, our higher education bodies, they get our historians, our scientists, our linguists, and everyone else, you know, with doctor in front of their name, to kind of write about our world and try to help us make sense of it. And Siobhan's written some really, really interesting pieces on the GAA. For example, victory speeches, true history and the nature of them, commemorative jerseys. But one that caught my eye this month was on the so-called Mayo curse and GAA curses more broadly. And actually, we find that there are several so-called curses in GAA history which share some similarities. But as I said, in quiet disbelief in Croke Park recently, in the first half of extra time, as Mayo really took control over that game, two Mayo men a few seats across from me were talking of the curse. You know, have we done it? Have we lifted the curse? And I found that kind of interesting that, yeah, they were joking on one level, but there was maybe something a bit more going on there.
I'm sure they don't need reminding that the All-Ireland has yet to be won, and that even getting the Dublin monkey off their backs doesn't necessarily mean that Sam is coming west just yet. Amazingly, though, this is something that even a former Taoiseach has been asked to comment on since the game.
Yes, and I'm sitting across from his biographer, of course, former Taoiseach Enda Kenny, was asked to comment in recent days, in the days since the semi-final. And he said on radio, in any event, I've never believed in the curse. What I do believe is an intent belief and relentless pursuit to play the game, win it on the pitch, win it on the scoreboard, and win it on the sideline. But even the fact he was asked to comment on it is kind of amazing, isn't it? And you know, while such beliefs and superstitions are good for a laugh to most of us, they are taken seriously by some. And I think we find when we look into this so-called Mayo curse and other examples like it, you know, we can learn a lot about the Irish psyche in sport and beyond, and how things like this spread, and more importantly, how they endure.
In fairness, it's probably something which is worth bearing in mind, and maybe the reason why the Mayo curse idea has taken off with such legs is because that Mayo team, the last one to have success, did have a lot of success on and off the pitch in abundance.
An incredible team. And that win in 1951 was witnessed by 78,200 and one people. You know, unfortunately, there will not be that many people at this year's Ireland football final. But I mean, they won it in style. They defeated a very strong Meath team, 2-8 to 9 points. And it was an extraordinary team because they'd won it in 1950 as well. They were captained by Sean Flanagan, a towering figure. Unusually, he was actually a member of the Dáil. He'd been elected in the May 1951 general election. So he's very popular on the pitch anyway. And obviously off it if he get himself into the Dáil. But he's the left cornerback in the GAA's team of the century. He knocks around in politics until the 1980s, retires only in 1989. But whatever about Flanagan and his kind of political success off the pitch, the team would not repeat their heroics on it again.
Of course, Henry Kenny, who was also a member of that team, then ended up entering Dáil Éireann as well, and it was Enda who then claimed his seat when Henry died in an untimely way a few years later. Mayo's unfortunate journey since then has led to one of the finest named Irish sporting books, in which the curse gets more than its fair share of mentions.
Look, what a great title for a book. Keith Duggan's study of Mayo GAA is entitled House of Pain, True to Rooms of Mayo Football.
Sorry, I don't mean to laugh, but it's
fantastic. And one of the chapters is called How Soon Is Now, from the Smiths. And it's a story of kind of more recent woe, but you know, it touches briefly on very different days of success. And interestingly, he writes about the supposed curse on Mayo. And what you learn is that there isn't one version of this, there's several. Keith Duggan says he heard it from a former Kerry footballer who won an All-Ireland against Mayo. In his words, there are several variations on the story, but the bones of it are that during the homecoming celebrations of 1951, a car full of boisterous Mayo footballers interrupted a master funeral as they passed by a church, and that an enraged priest or a fortune teller vengefully swore to the happy band of footballers that Mayo would not be champions again until all of them had left the earth. The origins of the story are obscure, but after matches in which Mayo teams have appeared to have wretched luck, it has inevitably got airings, and it can seem like as logical an explanation as...
I'm going to interrupt you there and point out that already there's a little bit of ambiguity about the story, because you fairly neatly summarised it there, but was it a mass or a funeral? Was it a priest or a fortune teller? Or, as other people have heard of it, a witch?
Yeah.
And also, why this explanation of a curse when Mayo weren't even in another final until 1989?
Exactly. And what's odd about the story, of course, there's no uniformity in pretty much any dimension of the tale. Most, but not all, tellers of the story place it in Foxford. Most, but not all, place it on a parish priest. And Eamon Henry wrote a lovely book, The Little Book of Mayo. He suggests that it's only really in the late 70s that this story even begins to appear. Other people argue that actually it only starts doing the rounds even later, perhaps even into the 1990s.
And of course, lest there still be any suspicions that this is the truth, that there is still some kind of curse upon the footballers of Mayo, there was a major oral history around the GAA done a few years ago, and it could find literally zero traces of any such incident.
What the GAA carried out was maybe the finest oral history project that's ever been done in this country. In 2017, they interviewed more than 50 participants in Mayo alone, and took questionnaires from around 90 others. And it is right across the island of Ireland, an incredible source for people in the future to understand Gaelic games. But when one of the academics who worked on the project discussed the Mayo interview, she said none of the players admitted to it. Nobody who went to the homecoming remembers it. Nobody remembers hearing about it until the 1990s. And this is amazing. And only in a sustained way since 2010, which would suggest this is very, very recent an invention.
Yeah.
And Edwin McGreal in the Mayo News writes some excellent stuff around Mayo GAA on and off the field of play. He writes about how when the research was presented in Mayo, one man present at the talk told Dr. Kramsky that a priest had searched church records in Foxford and found there was no funeral in the town on the day the All-Ireland champions of 1951 were parading through the town. So that raises very serious questions about this.
You can understand that the one surviving member of the 1951 team, that he might sort of find this whole talk about a curse particularly, I mean, it's close to the bone for that one surviving member. If his continual drawing of breath is supposed to be the reason why Mayo have yet to reclaim Sam since, but at least others of that 1951 vintage are able to find some humour in the story of this supposed curse.
Yeah, when the findings of the oral history report were being presented in 2017 in Mayo, there were two members of the team still alive, the great Paddy Prendergast, who survives, and Paulie Carney, who was in the United States. And one man in the audience recalled Paddy telling him, quote, if there was any truth in the curse, he'd fly over to America, shoot Paulie, and jump out of the aeroplane on the way home.
They just want this monkey off their back so very badly. Look, it may be a strong myth, and I suppose we should underline it very much is a myth in case anyone gets any ideas about trying to shove off the last surviving member of that team. It's by no means alone, though, in the GAA that there is this whole other folklore of different hexes and curses upon lots of other different sides.
Yeah, and look, these things are interesting because they tell us so much about collective memory, how we as groups of people come to believe things, and things that can really shape us and shape our identity. And Henry, in that book, The Little Book of Mayo, he writes about how before a more recent All-Ireland final defeat, another priest announced he was going to lift the damn curse.
Okay.
That is, if there was a curse to lift. In spite of his assurances, Mayo still lost the game. And some myths, and urban myths, can weigh us down. I think this one has probably weighed down Mayo people and their confidence. Other myths lift us up. I mean, generations of Dubliners genuinely believed they stood on the rubble of the Easter Rising, despite Hill 16 actually predating the Rising in its original terrace form, and the hill originally being called Hill 60 in honour of a battle in a far-off country.
What's remarkable about that, actually, is that when they redeveloped the stadium 10 or 15 years ago, and they sort of formally developed all of that and they got rid of the Nally Stand, I think that they relaid again Hill 16 and they tore up bits of the, inverted commas, original Hill 16, and they have them all put up in commemorative boxes. And the plaque that they issued in the commemorative boxes falls victim to this fiction that this was the rubble of Sackville Street in 1916. So that the formally presented presentation box, which stands in many a GAA honoree's living room, I'm sure, says this is a bit of Hill 16 and it's the rubble from the Rising, which of course is just plainly untrue.
And parts of the myth were incredible. Like the O'Rahilly, the great the O'Rahilly's car was said to be buried under the hill at one point. How these things grow and how they gain legs is extraordinary. But Mayo's curse myth has some similarities with other counties. Galway win a hurling championship in 1932. Subsequently, a parish priest allegedly condemns mass goers for sneaking out to attend the game, and he tells the congregation, may Galway never win an All-Ireland while a member of this parish is playing on the team. And the lore is that curse is lifted in 79. the year of Pope John Paul II's visit to Galway. And then they win the Liam McCarthy in 1980.
Yeah.
But you know, Siobhan Doyle's research shows there are many, many other examples that are very similar to this right across the island of Ireland.
Well, I love the idea that, of course, you know, at the same time, didn't Pope John Paul, he might have made a visit to Knock, which of course is in Mayo, and it would have been quite easy for him to just drop by. And if he was going to do a mass lifting of curses, that it would have been quite efficient to get two for the price of one. On the neighbouring island, soccer has even more of these kind of curse myths than the GAA does here, but there are still some similarities between them.
Yeah, in terms of association football, sometimes there's no curse in these matters, it's just bad luck. Mm. And so it was for St. Patrick's Athletic, who lifted the FAI Cup in 1961. And didn't do it again until 2014, despite getting to a few finals. When it comes to curses, association football on the neighbouring island has a lot of very good yarns. There's the case of Hibernian Football Club, James Connolly's football club. They were 114 years without winning the Scottish Cup and succeeded in losing 10 Scottish finals from 1902. Mm. And in Leith, the area that they play in, and Edinburgh, Lore, the failure of Hibs to win the cup was not because of the sporting prowess of Glasgow Rangers or Celtic, but the removal of a harp crest from the south stand of Easter Road and a gypsy's curse on the club. And when the modern Hibs crest, which includes a harp, was added to the facade of one of the grandstands in 2016, get this, they won the cup some 8 months later.
So the curse is that they remove the harp, even though they're the Hibernian FC, so there's clearly Irish links there. They remove a harp from the crest and stop winning stuff. They put a harp back
they
up on the facade
the
of one of the stadium
and
on Easter Road,
stuff,
and suddenly it's back again.
Derby County's more famous club lore has it that gypsies were forced to move on for the construction of the club's ground, put a curse on the team that they'd never win the FA Cup. And when they won the cup in 1946, the ball actually bursts during that game. And fans of the club say that's the moment that the curse passed. So these things endure, not just in Gaelic games. Mm. That sounds ridiculous to me. The Derby County curse, but they exist in other codes too.
Well, correlation and causation, I think, and those things being conflated quite a bit. Of course, it is easier to conclude that Hibs failed to win the cup quite often because there were two powerhouses in the other major city, and they're the reason why Hibs weren't able to get over the line. But if it wasn't an angry priest, and I don't mean to cause offence to any Western listeners this morning, but it does raise the question that what has stopped Mayo winning All Ireland?
There were very real factors beyond the gypsy curse. You know, that stopped Mayo winning All Ireland. Any visitor to London in Camden Town, the great pub, the Oxford Arms, has the Mayo GAA crest painted nice and big on the side. And there's a reason for that. You know, it's a reminder of the enormous emigration from Mayo throughout subsequent decades, in particular to London, but across the world. Indeed, by, you know, even some of the 1951 All Ireland winning team became victims of economic migration in the years that followed. Mm. So, you know, Mayo's difficulty was also Dublin's opportunity, to a lesser extent, men. And their families who settled in the capital would end up plying their trade here with clubs.
Sometimes
the county, and you know, young lads who've won All-Ireland finals with Dublin would have parents from Mayo. So it's bad luck, it's migration, and the sheer skill of others. These are all factors, you know, that lack the mystique of the supposed curse. Mm-hmm. But while it might be an invention, that it prevails as a myth in itself. And we are likely to see people write about this so-called Mayo curse as we come up to the All-Ireland final. That it survived for so long tells us a lot about ourselves as a people.
Well, we'll find out, I suppose, in the next fortnight whether the curse will live on for another year. Donal Fallon, as ever, thank you very much. Donal Fallon, the author of the Cymru to Me books and of Henrietta Street, From Tenement to Suburbia, available in all good bookshops now. Also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find anywhere you get your audio online.
On the Record with Gavin Riley.
On News Talk